Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We're going to talk about old-time sports for the next 10, 12, 15 minutes. With one of the best sports authors in the country, he decided, lo, these many years later, after they had come and gone, it was about time to remember back to the United States Football League, the USFL, and his new book, Football for a Buck, Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL, is available on all better bookshelves these days. Jeff Perlman joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. How you been, Jeff?
I know you've been thinking for the last 30 years, where's that USFL book?
I was actually a fan. You and I are of a same age, and that's right when I got into the sports business, sports media, working for ESPN when they were a partner with the USFL and showed some of their games. So I actually did. I followed the league. I grabbed the USFL hat. I think it was Memphis. I don't remember what team I had. But I did enjoy the league, and it was fun for a while, and then came to a crashing end, which you and I will get into in just a second. But the first question has to be, yeah, why now, 30-some-odd years later? It's probably an obvious answer, but I need I need to hear you tell me why.
All right, it's actually not an obvious answer, but everyone thinks it is. Okay. I've wanted to write a USFL book for the past 10 years, and I bothered sort of editors and agents about it, and I kept getting rejected. And about 4 years ago, I started working on a book about Brett Favre that came out called Gunslinger. And I had a bunch of bidders on it. And I said to Halton Mifflin, who published it, I said, I would take less money to do a Favre book if you let me do the USFL book. And that's it. I didn't know Trump would be president. I had no if you told me Donald Trump would be president, I would say, yeah, okay. It was just a love that I had from the time I was growing up in Mayo Pack, New York, rooting for the New Jersey Generals. And I'd always thought it would be a great book.
So Halton Mifflin said that they would do the book with you. Did you at least get the bump back up the advance when Trump became the president, knowing he was going to be a key figure in your USFL book?
No, because I got the deal for Favre and USFL at the same time, and that was 4 years ago. So once you sign the contract, it's not like they're going to be like, oh, hey. The one thing that happened, I will say, is, the book was considered a sort of, well, we'll put it out and who cares. And I think Trump brought it a lot more, in their eyes, gave it a lot more sort of heft.
They use the term passion project more in movies than they do in books. But would you describe this tome as just that for Jeff Perlman?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the true story. 1990, Mayo Pack High School. I was a senior. My English teacher, our final project was a 20-page paper on the subject of your choice. So I said I wanted to write about the downfall of the USFL. My teacher, Mr. Height, was like, no, I don't know. And then he let me. And I swear to God, I handed in 40 pages on the downfall of the USFL. I called the USFL offices 5 years after it had died. I had a Sporting News annual from 1985, and I had the USFL number on it. And I called, and I actually got an answering machine. And it said, you know, this is the USFL, blah, blah, blah. And I'm leaving these messages. And, hey, this is Jeff Perlman, and I'm a senior. Nobody ever called back.
That is funny. And Donald Trump, who was a major player in the USFL, both in the rise and the downfall, and that's kind of been your title, more so for the downfall than the rise, was the participation of Donald Trump. For our younger listeners who don't know about the USFL and don't know the backstory to the USFL, what did Donald Trump do to the USFL?
Well, the thing, when it started, it was a spring league, and that's what it was supposed to be. It was a spring league. They're going to draft regionally. You know, it was going to be so, like, the Philadelphia Stars had rights to the Penn State, Pitt, guys like that. And Trump was originally scheduled to be the owner of the New Jersey franchise in 1983. And then at the last minute, he dropped out. And another guy named Walter Duncan bought the team. And then he wanted to sell after the year. And Donald Trump bought the Generals. And in the lead up to buying the team, he was very pro-USFL. He was talking about how great it is. He's really excited. It's a wonderful league. As soon as he's granted ownership, we need to move to fall. We need to take the NFL on directly. Spring, if God wanted football in the spring, he would have invented baseball. And around that time, he had a meeting with Pete Rozelle, the NFL commissioner, that he paid for. Trump paid for it. The Pierre Hotel in New York City. He rented a suite, and he told Rozelle that he had very little interest in the USFL, that he just wanted an NFL franchise. What did he have to do to get to the NFL? And Rozelle told him bluntly, as long as I'm the commissioner of the NFL and as long as my heirs are involved in this league, you will never own a team. He saw Trump as kind of a huckster, charlatan, just didn't believe him. So Trump, you know, kind of being the guy who just charges ahead, led this movement to go to fall. And he had a lot of power in the USFL because he had the New York franchise and other big city franchises were not doing well. So he started meeting with television, different network officials, and he would come back to the other USFL owners and say these guys are, like, really interested in the USFL as a fall league and there's going to be a $90 million TV deal. It was all a lie. It wasn't just an exaggeration. They had no interest in the USFL as a fall thing. Donald Trump always saw the USFL as a ticket to get to the NFL. You remember the lawsuit, I'm sure.
Sure.
And, you know, it's called football for a buck because they ended up suing. And basically, he hired Roy Cohn as the attorney for the league. And Roy Cohn was famous for representing Joseph McCarthy 30 years earlier. And he told the other owners, we're going to hire Roy Cohn. And the NFL is going to settle immediately. We're not going to want to go through this. And the NFL did not settle. They said, bring it. Let's go to court. And the NFL sued the USFL sued the NFL for violating antitrust laws, for monopolizing television in the fall, for deliberate attempts to wipe the USFL out. And what the jury basically decided is that the NFL was guilty of everything USFL was saying, but that the USFL was its own worst enemy, and that Donald Trump in particular was an enemy of the league, and they won a dollar, and that was the end of it.
Right, which was, and I had never known the definition of this word before, was trebled because you can get more with certain qualifications and the like. So it was actually increased, tripled from $1 to $3 that the USFL beat the NFL for, won the lawsuit, but certainly lost the war. So you're telling me the first ever evidence of fake news was Donald Trump talking to his other USFL owners that TV networks had interest in the USFL as a major fall product?
Well, it's a tie. It would either be that or what Donald Trump used to do with the USFL. And you see it all over the old clips. That's what's funny. Now knowing what we know, he would use his fake publicist, John Barron, which was him disguising his voice. And he would call the different sports reporters from the Times and Daily News and the Post. And he would say, Mr. Trump has great dealings with the TV networks and he's very excited. Would you like to speak with him? I can get him for you. Sure. You know, Barry Stantz. Sure. I'll talk to Mr. Trump. And 20 minutes later, you have Donald Trump on the phone, who is the same guy as John Barron. So he was actually disguising his voice as a publicist to hype up his plans for the USFL.
Well, that is funny. That not completely and utterly surprising. We're talking to Jeff Perlman. He's got his new book about the USFL. Football for a Buck, the crazy rise and crazier demise of the USFL. Speaking of crazy, USFL has some crazy characters, too. They were a viable product in the spot. I thought it was a fun and a different idea, and it gave the diehard football fans a little something-something to just get them through the cold, hard months without the NFL. But it wasn't the quality, although they had Hall of Fame-level players. They had their one or two guys on each and every single team, but you had to fill out full complete rosters to be able to play an entire season. And in some of the cases, they had to reach character-wise for some of the guys who filled out these teams?
Oh, yeah. It's the most mishmashy. I wrote a book about the 86 Mets, and I wrote a book about the 90s Cowboys, and I always thought those would be the most bizarre sort of circumstances, and this just dwarfs it. I mean, the Washington Federals quarterback was Joe Gilliam, the former Pittsburgh Steeler.
Sure.
And by the time they signed him, he was a full-functioning coke addict, and he actually was the quarterback of the team while living either in the backseat of his Oldsmobile or in a halfway house in Washington, D.C. The San Antonio Gunslingers put someone on the disabled list because he slammed his penis in a trunk.
Don't.
And he had to go in the DL. The Los Angeles Express had a player named Greg Fields. And when the coach, John Hadle, cut him, he was a defensive lineman out of Grambling. Greg Fields punched him in the face. And then he started calling in death threats to the team. And he started showing up at practices and just staring at the coach from behind the fence. And the team had to hire Liberace's bodyguard away from Liberace to protect the coach because Greg Fields was showing up and calling in death threats after death threats after death threats. And because the USFL was the USFL, he wound up signing with the San Antonio Gunslingers, this guy Greg Fields, because they needed pass rushing help. And the Gunslingers stopped paying their players. So after a practice one day, Greg Fields got in his car and followed the owner of the team home, this guy Clint Mangus. And when he got to Mangus's house, he had a baseball bat with him. And he said to Clint Mangus, he was standing in front of his mansion, he said, "If you don't pay me, there's going to be some trouble here." And the owner went inside and came back out with $17,000 in cash.
17 said, grand?
Yeah, in cash. And said, "Am I ever going to see you again?" And Greg Fields said, "Nope." And he drove off, and that was the end of him in the U.S. So there's a million. I mean, there were teams. The Chicago Blitz and the Arizona Wranglers were two teams. They were traded for each other. Like, the rosters were literally traded for each other. Because after the first season, the owner of the Blitz, who lived in Arizona, didn't feel like flying to Chicago for nine games a year. So the solution they came up with was to trade teams. And then Chicago hired Marv Levy as their head coach. And he thought he was inheriting the team that was really good. But he was inheriting the Arizona team from 83, so he shows up, and he has all this junk because nobody bothered to tell him that the teams were traded for each other. Just a million things like that.
Well, that is that's a great story. And, oh, by the way, the USFL had some great players. They didn't necessarily stick around. They eventually ended up in the NFL, some Hall of Famers and the like. But their attempt to at least steal some headlines from the NFL was successful, at least for a period of time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they got three straight Heisman Trophy winners: Herschel Walker, Mike Rozier from Nebraska, Doug Flutie from Boston College. They got Doug Williams from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Brian Sipe from the Cleveland Browns. You know, a lot of big time college guys: Craig James, Reggie Collier, Tremaine Johnson, on and on and on. And the NFL was terrified. The NFL offices, they referred to the USFL as the useless. That's kind of a joke when it started, and they stopped laughing because one by one, players were taking the money of the USFL. You know, Steve Young would have been the number one pick in 84 by the Cincinnati Bengals. And he had no desire to go to Cincinnati whatsoever. So he ended up getting a $40 million contract, kind of an annuity, to play for the Los Angeles Express. You know, Mike Rozier would have been a top five pick in the NFL. He went to the Pittsburgh Maulers because they were going to give him $1 million a year. Yep. And it was terrifying to the NFL. Absolutely terrifying.
The USFL did have its moments. No one has attempted to reproduce what they did. The NFL, this upcoming season, we are going to have a spring football league, but it's more in conjunction with the NFL, a developmental type league. Your friend of mine, Gary Myers, is attached to it as well, and thinks it's got a chance to have some success as just an alternative viewing for National Football League fans during the off season. Can it work? Will it work? Did the USFL open a door that's been 30 years in the waiting for somebody else to try and walk through?
Well, I think spring is smart, and I think the markets are doing sort of small mid-major markets. If you look at the USFL, the franchises that did best, Jacksonville by far did the best. This is before the Jaguars were there. Memphis did really, really well. You know, the Chicago, Washington, those markets did terribly. But there are pockets of this country that are hungry for football and don't have sort of teams. And also, I just always think the USFL tried way too quickly to compete with the NFL. And if you're an alliance team and you're playing in Omaha or San Antonio and your quarterback gets picked up by the Bengals, the best thing you can do, I think, is celebrate it. Have a press release, brag about you saw him here and now you're going to see him in the NFL. And the USFL did the exact opposite, and it definitely hurt him.
That is interesting. All right, last thing, Jeff, and we wish you nothing but the best luck with the book. Has anyone from the administration reached out to tell you that either your facts or your portrayal of the facts is in any way fake news about the former USFL turned USF owner turned president of the United States?
No, but I had a lot of people mad at me, early Trump supporters, because I'll tell you real quick. 1985, Trump signed Doug Flutie out of Boston College.
Right.
And he sent a letter to all the other owners and the commissioner saying that he signed Doug Flutie and the rest of you should pay for it. He literally wrote a letter saying, "I've done the USFL a great favor and I expect the rest of you to pay for it." And I made the analogy because I think it's pretty accurate. It was Doug Flutie was the Mexico Wall 30 years before the Mexico Wall. He really was. And people did not like that comparison, but it's the exact blueprint he used, where he paid for something. He said, "We're going to have this, but don't worry, they're all going to pay for it." And of course, the USFL owners collectively gave him the middle finger and never paid for it.
And the somewhat ironic thing is that part of the problem is that the wall was never built quite big enough, and Doug Flutie was never quite big enough to become
Correct.
An NFL type quarterback.
Well said,
Jeff. Great stuff. Appreciate it. Best of luck with the book. Good to catch up. We appreciate a couple minutes of your time tonight.
All right. Thank you so much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.